This is MMATorch.com Editor-in-Chief Jamie Pennock, joined by Torch audio contributor John Taylor for a review of the WEC June 1st show, the Pulver vs. Faber card. Now, John, you were actually there live, so you got to take this in on a whole nother scale. I know you got in there partway through the second round of the McCullough-Alexander fight here. What were your overall impressions of the show and compared to what we saw last night with Elite XC?
Well, it was the polar opposite of last night's show. The crowd was absolutely on fire from the minute I got there. The crowd was pretty much standing and loud, very loud. ARCO Arena is famous for Sacramento Kings and how loud they can get for that team, and it was like that times two, you know, less people but louder. It was out of control energy in the building, and just a fantastic show. If last night you lost your faith in the sport, you probably regained it by watching this show. It was that good.
I'm in absolute agreement with you on that on that assessment here. They started off the show with Todd Harris introducing and Frank Mir, and they ran down the card. They did this really quickly, had the good intro as compared to Elite XC yesterday. And we got into the first fight after the first commercial break. Granted, this was the worst fight of the night and it was really, really boring. You didn't miss much by getting there halfway through the second round. The first round was really tentative. They just this fight wasn't Diego Sanchez Koscheck one bad with the stalling and going around, but it wasn't far off from it throughout. It was just really tentative throughout and really, really boring three-round fight that McCullough wins by split decision. What did you think from the round and a half that you saw on this?
Well, it looked like Razor Raw was just kind of mailing it in. He fought real tentative. And Kenneth Alexander, I mean, who's a local Sacramento fighter out of Uriah's Ultimate Fitness Gym. And talking to people in the crowd, a lot of people thought that Kenneth Alexander actually won the fight. And I don't know if that's hometown bias. I don't know how you scored it. But it looked like a tough fight to score just because of the inactivity of both fighters. So I saw that Alexander repeatedly would try to shoot, and when he would get Rob McCullough down, Rob would just stand up. And it just seemed like a lot of very tentative leg kicks by McCullough, and it looked like he didn't really want to take a risk in the fight. And pretty dull. And I actually was looking forward to this fight. So, and I'm sure the WC was looking at it like kind of a hot opener, you know, having Razor Rob kind of lead off the show. And unfortunately, it just kind of fizzled out. But it got made up for.
Yeah, definitely. I actually had the fight 29-28 for McCullough myself. I had him taking the first round, not by much, but he landed his shots more so than Alexander did. There really wasn't much happening, but McCullough got in some leg kicks and actually landed a couple of shots. But outside of that, nothing happened in the first round. Alexander took the second round because McCullough really mailed the second round in. But the third round, I thought McCullough landed a few shots and had a couple of decent kicks to take the round because neither man did anything. So I had 29-28 myself, but I could see how it could go the other way because you could have tossed that first round or even possibly the third round to Alexander as well. But
yeah. Either way, kind of a stinker. I mean,
either way, it was a stinker of a fight. They go to commercial break and come back with Chuck Liddell, Anderson Silva, and Stephen Bonner all shown ringside, and they previewed the August 3rd WEC show with three title fights. Then Craig Hummer interviewed Jamie Varner, the WEC lightweight champion, and they showed highlights of his win over Razor Rob. He talked about how he doesn't see his fight in August going five rounds. Then he predicted Faber to win in the main event. And that brings us to fight two, Mark Munoz versus Chuck Grigsby. Grigsby came in here with a 6-inch height advantage and a 6-inch reach advantage as well. This one goes 4-15 into the first round. Munoz gets a knockout here. He gets Grigsby down on the ground and starts coming down with some really hard overhand shots from his feet. And as Grigsby reaches to try to get a knee bar, he gets hit with a whole bunch of shots to the side, and he gets knocked out. I really liked what I saw out of Munoz here. I had this fight at 2 stars myself. I thought he figured out a strategy that worked against his much taller opponent, and finished him off when Grigsby made a mistake here. Grigsby didn't look that great in his debut. Munoz did, and I see him getting some more fights here in the future with WEC. How did this fight come out live for you?
Good for Munoz. I'll tell you that. The Ultimate Fitness Urias Gym theme continued here with Mark Munoz, who's also training at Ultimate Fitness in Sacramento. And he's a Division I wrestler. The thing that impressed me is you could definitely see the impact of training with Uriah. Uriah is definitely a wrestler that doesn't lay. He's very active, and you saw the same thing with Mark Munoz tonight. Punch passing consistently, I mean, throwing the legs to the side and coming with those big overhand rights, and he was really effective at it. Grigsby was huge. And is more of a boxer. And Grigsby actually rocked Munoz early in the first round with some shots. And I was like, oh, let's see. I mean, maybe Grigsby, might have something here. But then Munoz with the takedowns and that last flurry on the ground, Grigsby looked hurt bad. And it took him quite a while to get up. Even during the commercial break, they were... he was still laying there, so got him to his feet, and finally he walked off under his own power. But that was just a brutal, brutal knockout. So,
well, he was out. They showed on seeing it on the replay. He was out on the first shot after he grabbed. He tried grabbing the knee as he reached down to grab the knee.
Yeah, I didn't even see him grabbing for a knee bar. I must have had a bad angle on that.
The replay angle they were showing on TV showed him reaching down to try to grab the knee or grab something to do something, and he just left his head open and took a shot right across the jaw, and his head hit the mat, and I'm pretty sure he was out on that one, and he ate two or three more before the ref got in there to stop it. So, yeah, that was quite the nasty finish.
Yeah, I mean, I know Mark Munoz is definitely got a heavy hand. So, one shot would have probably done it clean, and it looked like he landed about four, and it was ugly. There was definitely a hush amongst the crowd when he was laying there. So, but from all indications, it looks like he got up. So, Mark Munoz definitely has a future in the WEC. I think he's one of those guys that's he's one of Uriah's boys, and Uriah's the poster boy, so he's definitely, going to get opportunities that maybe some other people wouldn't, so.
Definitely, definitely. Well, and continuing on our theme of this being the polar opposite of last night, we get a commercial break and right to fight number three. The pacing on this show was really well done. They went over on their time, but that's because they're two title fights went 3 and 5 rounds respectively, so as opposed to 45 minutes to an hour of filler on this show, it was all fights bringing it to the time that it did. But our third fight here was a Battle of Unbeatens with another WEC debut in Danny Castillo against Donald Cerrone. Castillo looked okay with going for a shoot, but he ate a knee to the gut right off the bat, and then got a takedown. Cerrone pulled up on the rubber guard and went for a triangle, but Castillo pulled out of it, threw a couple of shots, but Cerrone catches the arm, locks in the arm bar. Castillo somehow didn't tap right off the bat. He held it off, but then Cerrone rolled it through and held on, and it was a verbal submission by Castillo as his arm was kind of caught under him. On TV, they were wondering if he actually submitted or if the ref called the fight, but they obviously announced the verbal submission. So, you know, I had this at a Star Plus, very short fight, just kind of there, but a good win for Cerrone and a nice catch of the armbar after missing on the triangle attempt.
Yeah, Donald Cerrone, cowboy, he trains out of Greg Jackson's camp, and he's a Muay Thai fighter that has developed tremendous submission skills. I think he's 8-0, and I think 7 of his wins have come from submission. And he was primarily a Muay Thai fighter, you know, so I just think that some people naturally have really good skills from their back, and he's one of them. And Danny Castillo, again, out of the Ultimate Fitness Gym in Sacramento, another one of Uriah's boys. And he was 3-0, I believe, and he had done most of his work in a local in Livermore, California, Palace Fighting Championships, which is kind of an upstart promotion. Guy that's supposed to have good hands, good wrestling, and went out there and just got caught, you know, got caught in an arm bar. And Donald Cerrone's no joke. I mean, he's going to be one of the guys that's a legitimate contender at 155, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe locking horns with a Razor Rob here in the next few months. I mean, it seems like kind of a natural matchup because I don't think Razor Rob's ready to challenge Jamie Varner again yet. So.
No, especially with his fight in this show, I don't think they toss him into a title fight right off the bat. But we get a commercial break here, and then they run down the August 3rd card again. And Craig Hummer interviews Carlos Condit, who talks up his challenger and tries to sell his fans to come to Vegas for the fight up from New Mexico. Get another commercial break, and we're on to our first of two tremendous fights on this card. Miguel Torres versus Yoshiro Maeda, bantamweight title fight here. This one goes 3 rounds, and it's stopped because Maeda's eye is completely shut and really nasty looking from a lot of punishment here. We said on our Elite XC audio that the Robbie Lawler, Scott Smith second round was one of the best second rounds we've seen. I think this upstaged it in round two here with Maeda and Torres, but they come out with a kind of sloppy round, yet still really exciting. In round one, they were kind of a step off from what they were attempting to accomplish here. And I thought it was interesting throughout the fight with Maeda just kind of standing with his hands at the sides, kind of taunting Torres. And that came into play in round two with both of them kind of taunting each other. But in round two, just a couple of kicks on a prone Torres from Maeda led to Torres responding with an upkick to the face. They taunt a little bit to each other, and they trade some more shots. Torres lands a couple of big knees. Maeda turns around and lands a bunch of shots. Maeda grabs the toe hold, and then Torres grabs one on him. We had a double toe hold, double ankle lock, and finally Torres rolled out of it with Maeda landing a big elbow as Torres was going for the back. He almost locked in the triangle, but didn't hold onto the arm, and then he got mounted and rained down some heel shots to the ribs as the round came to a close. Just a really, really exciting round. Some of the best stuff I've seen possibly ever. And then in round three, Torres just had his way with Maeda and kind of picked him apart with left jabs to the eye as Maeda's eye closed up. And he gets the stoppage at the end of three rounds. John, I'm sure the crowd was just absolutely nuts live as it came through on TV. So how was this fight for you?
Unbelievable. It was one of the most unreal paces I've ever seen in a fight. The first round, you're right, it was very much sloppy. And it got kind of nasty, you know. Two guys that seemed like they start having some personal issue with each other in the cage, in midstream. It turned real nasty. And like I said, the first round, I mean, although sloppy, was still very exciting and incredibly paced. But the second round was, I will never in my life forget that round. It was so good. I've never seen, I mean, it had every kind of drama you wanted. Close submissions with the ankle locks, both having them on. Torres with, some incredibly unorthodox stand-up. Maeda taking a bunch of shots and still, returning fire. A lot of taunting. It was pretty much anything you could have asked for in a round. It had it. And the crowd was absolutely going nuts during that second round. And then the third round, like you said, Maeda started to get the old PhD going. For those of you at home, it's the Pumpkin Head Deluxe. He had some serious swelling going on. And Torres started picking him apart because he couldn't see, Maeda couldn't see that jab coming. And Torres kept landing it and landing it and landing it. And then the stoppage at the end of the third round, unlike the Scott Smith Robbie Lawler fight, it was a valid stoppage. Because I wouldn't have liked to have seen Maeda after a fourth round of taking punishment to the face. So unbelievable fight, real good. Miguel Torres is officially one of my favorite fighters to watch. The guy's really just a fantastic fighter and incredibly competitive, and a guy that shows absolutely no fear out there. And yeah, I think that's one of the guys that we're going to have the pleasure of watching a lot for the next, 5 years.
Absolutely. And, these smaller weight divisions kind of get a bad rap through some of the MMA viewing community. But, they're putting on some of the more exciting stuff. I'll take some of these bantamweight and featherweight fights over a lot of the heavyweight fights that UFC puts on.
Yeah, well, look at Elite XC. I mean, they could take a note
Well,
here. The smaller weight classes, that's exciting, fast-paced action.
absolutely. And you know what? The thing with these smaller weight classes too, you get in these 3 to 5 round fights. A lot of these guys at 145 and lighter are in such great shape that they're not gassing in the second round like a lot of the light heavyweights and heavyweights seem to do. And it makes for more exciting late rounds. And that brings us into our main event of the evening. After just one commercial break, we get right to it. I mean, again, back to the pacing on this show being really, really good. Getting right into the fights, one last hype video, but the crowd was going nuts here for Faber, completely pro Faber in this crowd, completely anti-Pulver throughout. But round one, they get a clinch for a short time in the center of the cage, and then they separate before clinching again. Faber lands a couple of uppercuts, and he's landing some really hard shots throughout this round. He slipped going for a high kick, and Pulver got down on top, but Faber nicely held on to butterfly guard here until Pulver backed away. They stand back up. We get another eye poke 2 nights in a row, but Pulver doesn't want the stoppage. He goes right back into it. Faber with some more right hands. Pulver got a couple of nice counters in here, but Faber was throwing some real bombs. His hands were heavy all night. And Faber finished the round with a spinning back fist after Pulver almost had his back. This was a definite 10-9 round for Faber for me. Your thoughts on round one of our main event?
Good, yeah. I mean, I think Faber definitely threw Jens off with the fact that he's got good boxing, he's got good Muay Thai, and the thing with Faber is he was just so much more explosive than Jens was in the first round, and I think you got to see it was very symbolic when Faber slipped. You see Jens actually jump on him, And I thought that was very symbolic of, everybody thought Jens would want to stand. But Faber was shooting so many right hands through. I think Jens was like, oh, maybe if I can get on top, maybe that would be more advantageous because Pulver looked just a step slow.
Beer made that same observation on commentary when Pulver went down, when Faber slipped.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting because I thought, oh, maybe Pulver just let him get up, But I think it just showed that I don't think Pulver was expecting Faber to come out with the stand-up that that he did. They always say, when you're fighting a southpaw, what should you throw? Straight right hand. And it seems so basic, such a basic concept. And Faber just kept shooting that straight right hand. It was hitting Pulver the whole round. And as you get into to the later rounds, it never stopped failing him. He kept hitting him with it. So, but Pulver. I mean, it was probably, one of the more competitive rounds. I think the second round would have been if you were to give any kind of sway to Pulver, it was there. But you're probably going to get into that right now. So,
Yeah, I thought round two was the best round of the fight here. Although Faber did accidentally land a low kick to the groin area of Pulver early on, but again, Pulver recovered quickly. He wasn't taking 5 minutes to recover here. He took about 30 seconds, and he was ready to go. Faber again with the right, though, and a takedown, and he landed some huge elbows. Pulver gets on the full guard and manages to get up to his feet off the cage. But then Faber rocked him, and he looked out on his feet. He went down to a knee. I thought it was about to be stopped, but he recovered and got into the clinch. But then Faber blasted him with another flurry on the cage, and I'm sitting here watching this thinking, how is Pulver still in this? It was just incredible that he was taking some of these shots and he was still in it.
Yeah,
And then he
fantastic work by Pulver, just recovering.
absolutely. And then he rocked Faber with a couple of shots of his own, until Faber grabbed a leg and took him down again. But Pulver rolled out, almost got a choke, but Faber got up again and they were back to standing up. Faber got another flurry and landed a couple elbows and landed a couple more shots before the end of the round. And again, this is this 10-9 Faber for this round. Another great round, and I was just in amazement that Pulver was still in this fight after that round.
Yeah, ironically, Pulver was the most hurt in the second round, but he also got his best work in himself in the second round, which is an amazing testament to how tough he is. Anybody else would have been out of there. When he got dropped with the right hand, I was like, well, the fight's over. I thought to myself, I said to my friend, I was like, this one's done. Pulver was somehow able to clinch up. And actually delivered an uppercut that actually was the first time I think we've seen Faber legitimately rocked in a fight. He definitely took a step back and had to get his bearings about him. But as was the theme pretty much all night, anytime Jens mounted any kind of offense, he was unable to follow up. It looked like he was just a step slow.
Yep.
So.
Well, and then our next three rounds were all very similar. They kind of started to lose a little steam near the end of the third round here. But the third round saw Pulver land a couple of nice uppercuts. Faber had a really nice move with a fake and then landing the overhand right. And then he also landed three or four really hard body kicks, just shins right to the ribs. Pulver's wrestling was impressive throughout this entire match because he had a really nice sprawl in the third round, where he ended up on top. But again, Faber rolled through it and got on top himself in that round. And then the fourth and fifth round were pretty much identical with Faber kind of landing some rights here and there, and then kind of doing some exchanges with Faber getting the best of it, but they had really lost steam by this point, and they just eked out two more rounds, and no one could decisively finish it, but there was no doubt throughout any of this I had Faber winning every round. It was a 50-45 card for me, and it was 50-45, 50-44, 50-44, unanimous decision for Faber. No surprises on the decision, but really good post-fight interviews from both fighters as well. But John, your thoughts on the last three rounds and the finish of this main event?
Yeah, the last three rounds were very similar to one another. My main thought is Uriah has become just a really complete mixed martial artist. His boxing, his Muay Thai have now come to a point where they are, you know, maybe not quite as effective as his wrestling, his ground and pound game, and his submission game, but they're definitely, you know, above average. I mean, he outboxed a very good boxer in Jens Pulver. Now, I mean, would he have outboxed Jens Pulver in, you know, 1999? I don't know. But in 2008, you know, he has shown that he's actually a better stand-up fighter than Jens is at this point. I think that's something that is a testament to the fact that Faber just works harder than anybody else. He trains with the best people. You know, he used to train with Master Andy Kay, and now he trains with Master Tong Lor. Both, you know, fantastic Muay Thai fighters in their own right, and people that Uriah pretty much brought in to make his striking that much better. And he's been working with, you know, Andy Kay for the most part of 2006, 2007, and Tong Lor for, you know, most of this year. And the proof is in the pudding. I mean, he's a pretty damn good striker now, and he showed it. So,
well, and I thought this was a great fight and a great challenge for Faber here to really show everyone that he is a complete fighter, because, I mean, his other fights just haven't been that. He hasn't had to show the complete package, and he was able to pull it out. And as he said in his post-fight interview, this is his first 5-round fight ever, and he didn't gas. He wasn't gassed at all. He was there till the end, still throwing those right hands till the end. And that was another nice aspect of the fifth round, is he didn't just coast it completely. He was still pushing the action and still trying to land some good shots and still trying to actively win the round. So
absolutely, it was the antithesis of what Razor Rob did in his fight. Uriah, even though he had to know he was up 4-0, and he still went out there and tried to finish the fight. I mean, that's just a testament to the kind of fighter he is. It's also a testament to how tough Jens is. I mean, Jens wasn't going to go, he wasn't going to get stopped, you know. He was going to keep fighting. A lot of times, even in the fourth and fifth rounds, when Uriah would hit him with a right hand or with a jab, you saw Jens actually, you know, physically move his hand up to grab his eye. It had to be bothering him a lot. So, but I thought Uriah was incredibly gracious in victory, and I think Jens was equally gracious in defeat. Two class acts, definitely kind of a passing of the torch as far as that goes. And, you know, Jens is a legend, the first UFC lightweight champion. List goes on and on. He's fought in every major organization. He's, you know, beaten and been beat by some of the biggest names in the game. And Uriah Faber he's the next generation, man. He's going to be around for a good long time, and we'll see what's next for him. So
absolutely, and he is just absolutely the real deal right now. I mean, he is absolutely the elite at his weight class, and he showed that tonight that he has a complete game. And you know, any last thoughts on this show from you, John? You got to take it in live. Any other thoughts on the crowd and just the overall presentation from a live standpoint?
Yeah, crowd was great. The pacing was fantastic. I mean, it seemed like that show just moved right along. It was never long. It just showed that Zuffa and Versus, to an extent, they know how to put on a show. They've been there before, and it shows a lot of the inexperience in the Elite XC crew and the CBS crew, with just kind of not knowing how to make an entertaining presentation. And I think Zuffa just does it real well. It came off very professional, and it was the first WEC show, I think, that really came off like a big deal. It came off like a big show, and I think that's fantastic. I think that's fantastic for the WEC. So I mean, and my only other lasting thought is, what does Uriah Faber do from here? I mean, he's running out of featherweights. It looks like Mike Brown, who has been brought into the WEC, who got a big victory over Jeff Curran, unanimous decision victory. Maybe he might be next in line for Faber. Or I've heard rumblings that Faber might drop down and have a super fight with Miguel Torres, which I think would be fantastic. And there's thoughts of Uriah moving up to 155 and going to the UFC. And honestly, I think Uriah would have problems with some of the bigger guys. So, but we'll see. I mean, that's the questions I have. Who do they bring in for Uriah to fight?
And hopefully we'll find out here sooner rather than later what the next move is for Mr. Faber. Well, John, thank you again for joining me here, and I'm sure we will talk to you sometime soon.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you very much.
All right.